Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to this edition of our English feature program. I'm Philippa Hitchin. Coming up today, the president of Caritas Internationalis speaks of the challenges facing the church in Latin America today. Amnesty International calls on world leaders to live up to the promises enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. But first, Pope Benedict meets here in the Vatican with 9 new ambassadors accredited to the Holy See. Pope Benedict XVI had a busy day on Thursday as he met with new ambassadors from 9 nations in Africa, Asia, and Eastern Europe. The ambassadors from Tanzania, Uganda, Liberia, Chad, Bangladesh, Belarus, Guinea, Sri Lanka and Nigeria presented their credentials at a joint meeting in the Clementine Hall in the Vatican. My colleague Charles Collins takes a closer look at the Pope's message to each of the newly accredited diplomats.
The Pope told the representatives from Tanzania, Uganda, Liberia, Chad, Bangladesh, Belarus, the Republic of Guinea, Sri Lanka, and Nigeria that in the modern world, leaders of nations have an important role, not only in their own country, but in international relations.
Excellence, je suis heureux de vous accueillir au moment de la présentation des lettres.
He said the essential measure of politics is the search for justice and the respect for the dignity and rights of all people. Several of the countries are experiencing civil strife, and to these he urged them to ease tensions, especially among religious and ethnic groups, and for all people to work together for the common good. He issued a separate letter to each ambassador highlighting the countries as they were presented to him by a Vatican official.
His Excellency, Mr. Nene Batawa, Ambassador of Uganda to the Holy See.
Pope Benedict highlighted the achievements of Uganda in the fields of education, development, and health care, especially in the struggle against HIV/AIDS. He pointed out the success of the prevention policy based on continence and faithfulness in marriage. He also encouraged the rebuilding efforts of the country after many years of turmoil and abandonment.
His Excellency, Mr. Wesley Momo Johnson, Ambassador of Liberia to the Holy See.
Liberia has also come out of a civil war, and the Holy Father said that the people of the country deserve to be delivered from the poverty, food insecurity, and unemployment that have afflicted them so long.
His Excellency, Mr. Ahmada Rwayamamu Nwamara, Ambassador of Tanzania to the Holy See.
The Pope said that Tanzania is held in esteem for the important role it has taken in the process of bringing peace to the Great Lakes region of Africa and for its help in other peacekeeping initiatives. He also pointed out the positive steps taken by the country in combating corruption.
His Excellency, Mr. Obed Wadzani, Ambassador of Nigeria to the Holy See.
To the ambassador of Nigeria, the Holy Father noted the important role Nigeria plays on the African continent and encouraged the country to use her considerable human and material resources in ways conducive to the peace and prosperity of neighboring countries.
His Excellency, Mr. Sergei Alenik, Ambassador of Belarus to the Holy See.
Finally, he reminded the ambassador from Belarus that his country is called to contribute to the construction of a common European home, in which borders are seen as places of encounter and not lines of division, or worse, insurmountable walls. To all the ambassadors, he pointed out the positive contributions made by the church in their respective countries, and he spoke of the role Catholics can play in the building of society.
The The president of the Catholic Church's Aid and Development Confederation, Caritas Internationalis, has received an award in recognition of his work to help the victims of last year's earthquake in Peru. Honduran Cardinal Oscar Andrés Rodríguez Maradiaga was presented with the award by the Peruvian ambassador to the Holy See on Wednesday. The earthquake in August 2007 destroyed the coastal town of Pisco, leaving over 500 dead and 100,000 homeless. Cardinal Rodriguez told us more about the vital work of Caritas in the days and weeks following that disaster.
Well, it was a very sad experience because seeing so much suffering, especially of the poorest of the poor, for us is always painful. But as well, to see the amount of volunteer workers, I was really amazed when I arrived to the warehouse of Caritas and when I saw the amount of young men and women that were devoting their time just to help was really, really a beautiful experience. And then I saw a people that was suffering, but people with hope. And this is one of the characteristics of Latin America. Even in the worst circumstances, when you're suffering, you never lose hope. And I was delighted to help. And I am happy to dedicate this award to Caritas Internationalis.
Speaking about his own country, Honduras, Cardinal Rodriguez went on to compare the level of faith in Latin America with his experience of the church in wealthier first world countries.
Well, it's not easy to compare because every circumstances are different. But I would say when you have nothing to trust in and you trust only in God, it's easier for you to be near God. When you have other gods or goddesses, you have more difficulties, and that's the problem in some places where you have put another creator instead of God, in the place of God. And this is why sometimes faith is weakening. I would say that, like the Bible says, when you are poor, you trust only in your Lord.
At the same time, Cardinal Rodriguez told us that poverty represents one of the many challenges facing the church in Latin America today.
There are many. The first one of all is poverty, because regardless of the economic progress some nations are having, still the distribution and inequality is motivating growing poverty. And so this is our first challenge, how to help our people to come out of these situations of social injustice. Secondly, of course, how to strengthen your faith, because we are under a siege, I would say, of sects, fundamentally sects, that are offering a very easy way to serve God, and many times they are being transformed in local businesses for some local pastors. This is a big challenge for us. How can we strengthen the faith of our people that they can persevere in their faith?
We asked Cardinal Rodriguez what else he thinks the church can do to try and bridge the growing gap between rich and poor and to achieve the UN's Millennium Development Goals.
Well, we are trying to dialogue with the authorities of the world. For instance, last week there was a summit in Peru where all the leaders of the European Union and the presidents of Latin American and Caribbean countries were together. And we, as Caritas, with CELAM, the Bishops' Council of Latin America, and the local pastors, delivered a letter to the Prime Minister of Germany, Mrs. Angela Merkel, and to the President of the European Parliament, focusing these items that it was necessary to try to arrive to the Millennium Goals. And for this, it's necessary to destine more money for development.
Finally, we asked Cardinal Rodriguez whether he believed the Church is out of touch with ordinary people searching for God in contemporary society.
Well, I don't know what kind of objection is this, because the persons who say that is they don't know the Church, or what do they think about the Church. The Church is not only the hierarchy, the Church is every baptized, and so we are not out of the world, but in the world. Many times the problem is that the pastoral methods are not adequate for the times of today. And so that is why in the Bishops' Conference in Aparecida, there was a big appeal to pastoral conversion. It means to change. Instead of waiting in your churches or rectories people to come, you have to go out and to look for the people. And this is really a new evangelization and a new missionary impulse that is necessary in our today's church.
And my thanks there to Honduran Cardinal Oscar Andres Rodriguez Maradiaga, President of the Catholic Church's Global Aid and Development Confederation, Caritas Internationalis. Years on from the drawing up of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, world leaders should apologize for failing to live up to those standards and recommit themselves to delivering concrete improvements for all. That's the message contained in the 2008 annual report from Amnesty International, which works to defend human rights through more than 2 million members in countries all over the world. The report, released on Wednesday, says governments must act now to close what it calls the yawning gap between promise and performance. It warns the biggest threat is the absence of a shared vision and says injustice, inequality and impunity are still hallmarks of our world today. At the Rome launch of the report, Amnesty Italia Director of Communications Riccardo Nuri spelt out the extent of human rights violations documented over the past year.
In 2007, Amnesty International recorded execution in 24 countries, cases of torture and ill treatments in 81 countries, law criminalizing freedom of speech and freedom of press in 77 countries, prisoners of conscience in 45 countries and unfair trial in 54 countries. This is a clear demonstration of the extent of the failure of the international community in respecting the promises of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted by the UN in December 1948.
When that first statement of fundamental freedoms and rights was adopted, hopes were high that the horrors of the Second World War were over and a new era of peace, justice and democracy was dawning. Former American First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt voiced those hopes as the document was unanimously approved by leaders of every nation present at the UN General Assembly of 1948.
This Universal Declaration of Human Rights may well become the international Magna Carta of all men everywhere.
Meanwhile, in his recent address to the UN General Assembly in New York, Pope Benedict stressed the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is still a vital tool for the protection of human rights and the promotion of justice and peace for all.
The promotion of human rights remains the most effective strategy for eliminating inequalities between countries and social groups and for increasing security. Indeed, the victims of hardship and despair, whose human dignity is violated with impunity, become easy prey to the call to violence, and they can then become violators of peace. the common good that human rights help to accomplish cannot, however, be attained merely by applying correct procedures, nor even less by achieving a balance between competing rights. The merit of the Universal Declaration is that it has enabled different cultures, juridical expressions, and institutional models to converge around a fundamental nucleus of values and hence of rights.
Pope Benedict XVI addressing the UN General Assembly in New York in April this year. Yet the details of Amnesty International's latest report make for somber reading, with killings, torture, rape and repression of dissidents being carried out with impunity in many nations. 2008, the report says, presents an unprecedented opportunity for new leaders coming to power and countries emerging on the world stage to set a new direction and reject the short-sighted policies and practices which have made the world a more divided and dangerous place.
Too often, political leaders are only looking at the political aspects and dimension and neglecting the human rights violations, which are often the cause of later conflicts or political crises.
Owen van der Bocht is director of the Africa programme at Amnesty's London headquarters.
We felt it was important as Amnesty International to look back 60 years. I mean, in 1948, a number of states committed to a broad range of human rights, to respect them and to fulfil those rights. And although many positive developments have been noticed since those 60 years, we also regret to see that many of those human rights remain an illusion for many people, including in Africa.
You're talking about positive developments that have taken place. What do you see as the most important areas of progress over these past six decades?
Well, after the Universal Declaration had been established, we also saw the elaboration of a broad range of human rights treaties and conventions to which many states signed up. And that really strengthened the human rights framework, and making that framework known to the citizens, to the people, to allow them to come up for their rights is certainly an important development. And we have certainly also seen it, for example, in many countries where people increasingly become aware of their rights and also increasingly demand accountability, justice and equality from their leaders and their governments.
Globalization and, of course, the media revolution in particular have played an important role, haven't they, in trying to force governments to live up to the commitments they agree to in this Universal Declaration. And yet it also seems to have hardened many politicians who've learned how to deal with such international criticism.
Well, one of the things Amnesty International continues to do is, of course, document and the various human rights violations and abuses which are taking place, put them out there in the public, and also mobilize our membership to make sure that those issues are being addressed by governments. But there is certainly also an important role to play for people on the ground, for the activists, to play their role as well. And that is certainly happening. I mean, we saw it last year, for example, when in Sierra Leone, a woman who were victim of sexual violence during the conflict, a number of years later, come up for their rights, demand reparation because they are still in a very vulnerable situation. We've seen it over the last few months as well with regard to Zimbabwe, where basically the whole civil society in Southern Africa mobilized around arms transfers going into Zimbabwe to stop those. And we really feel that there is a key role to play there for the activists in holding their governments accountable. And also that governments change their political culture and also accept that they should be accountable to the people.
And yet if you take the case of Zimbabwe there, although there was a small step in the direction of preventing the arms shipments coming into the country, the violations of human rights seem to go on unabated, with the international community able to do very little in this case to stop them.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true. Arrests continue. And even last year, we saw that human rights defenders, political opponents, and are really at risk, arbitrary arrests and ill treatment. And unfortunately, that has only continued after the elections earlier this year. There has been some engagement from Southern African regional institutions to try to address the human rights abuses, but very limited. And they have only focused on the political dimension of the crisis and not enough on the human rights dimension. And that's where we also call on governments to take that much more into perspective. Too often, political leaders are only looking at the political aspects and dimension and neglecting the human rights violations, which are often the cause of later conflicts or human rights political crises.
We heard Pope Benedict at the United Nations earlier this year talking about the principle, the responsibility of the international community to intervene in crisis situations to protect the most vulnerable when their own government is unable or unwilling to do so. What were your reactions to his words?
Well, we certainly would encourage a stronger involvement of the international community and foremost the members of the Security Council in ensuring that ongoing human rights violations in crisis situations are stopped. It's important to stress that intervention, and certainly military intervention, is very much the last resort. A lot can and should be done under the preventive mechanisms to make sure that the situation doesn't deteriorate. And we would also continue to emphasize the responsibility of the state itself to protect its people and also to ensure that human rights are being respected. Because, for example, Darfur is a good example that before the conflict started in 2003, human rights violations were already occurring. People were arbitrarily arrested. There were unfair trials against people from Darfur. There was a lot of discrimination. And because that hadn't been addressed, because the Sudanese government was not held accountable for those abuses, it really pushed people to get involved in an armed opposition and triggered the wider scale conflict with the dramatic situations we have seen over the last 5 years. So the earlier an involvement takes place and also addresses human rights violations, the better.
And yet so many governments hide behind this idea of cultural differences. What is a human right in Western culture is not necessarily in ours. How do you deal with that?
Well, we, as Amnesty International, we always find it a very weak argument, specifically also because many of those states have signed up to international treaties or even regional treaties, such as in Africa, where many of those rights are also spelled out in great detail. And we really consider that those rights are indivisible and universal. And the best example is, of course, the 60 years ago, the Universal Declaration on Human Rights, which contains a broad range of what we call civil political rights, but also social rights, such as the right to education, the right to health, etc. So we always found it a very weak argument to say that they are not universal or that one right is more important than another.
Do you think there is any grounds for looking back at that declaration of 60 years ago and adapting it in any way? There's a lot of discussion around this, isn't there?
Well, for us and the International, it remains very valuable. And what we basically ask is not to change it or not to adapt it, but ask world leaders and governments in general to recommit to those same rights and same values of justice, equality and fulfillment of human rights.
Looking back over the past year, 2007, what would you say have been the main areas of concern if you had to pick certain countries or parts of the world?
Well, if I focus on Africa, which is the area I'm most working on, I would certainly regret to see that certain armed conflicts have continued or even have gone worse in terms of human rights situations. I mean, Somalia, Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo, Chad, and then also Darfur. We see that many of the victims are civilian people. Their villages are being attacked. Women and girls are being abused. Sexual violence committed against them. Killings of civilians as well. So that is a responsibility of all the parties to the conflict, and not only of the governments. We also still see a lot of repression. Activists, independent media, who are at risk for expressing their opinion or for coming together to mobilize themselves to defend a specific cause, they continue to be at risk of harassment, of arrest, and unfair trials. And then, of course, and certainly again in Africa, the right to health, the right to education and food, etc., remains an illusion for millions of people on the continent. And there also we're calling for increased efforts and recommitment of their governments.
You talk about the vital role of civil society in trying to press for governments to live up to these commitments to the human rights that are contained in the document, in the Universal Declaration. What role do you see the churches or faith-based organizations playing in this effort?
Well, certainly the church or faith-based organizations in general and the Catholic Church have a lot of influence in certain countries and should use that influence in a positive way. I mean, we have seen it, for example, around the moratorium on the death penalty when there was a vote at the UN General Assembly, when also in preparation of the vote, the Catholic Church played a positive role. We have seen using their influence in other human rights crises, for example, like in Zimbabwe. At the same time, we also have seen in other areas where we would also expect faith-based organizations to play an important role, where more could be done. For example, on the rights of specific people who are being discriminated.
What would you see as the most important point to celebrate as we mark this 60th anniversary of the Declaration?
Well, I would highlight the fact that the document and the Declaration is still very valuable 60 years on. We hope that this anniversary will also make it or give it more publicity, that increasingly people, even in rural areas who do not necessarily have access to all the media, become aware of the Declaration, of the rights contained into it, and also start mobilizing to make those rights a reality for them in their day-to-day life.
The Declaration was adopted as a common standard of achievement and cannot be applied piecemeal according to trends or selective choices that merely runs the risk of contradicting the unity of the human person and thus the indivisibility of human rights. Since rights and the resulting duties follow naturally from human interaction, it is easy to forget that they are the fruit of a commonly held sense of justice, built primarily upon solidarity among the members of society and hence valid at all times and for all peoples. This institution was expressed as early as the 5th century by Augustine of Hippo, one of the masters of our intellectual heritage. He taught that saying, "Do not do to others what you would not want done to you," cannot in any way vary according to the different understandings that have arisen in the world. Human rights, then, must be respected as an expression of justice and not merely because they are enforceable through the will of the legislators.
Pope Benedict XVI addressing the UN General Assembly in April 2008. And earlier you were listening to Erwin van der Bocht, Director of the Africa Programme at the London headquarters of Amnesty International. That's all from me, Philippa Hitchin, and from all of us here at the English programme for today. Join us again at this same time tomorrow or find us on the internet, www.vaticanradio.org/English. For now, stay tuned to Vatican Radio. Laudato Jesus Christus.